Okay, so I'm going to go through this. We probably won't get through the lot. It's quite big, isn't it? Quite long. So we probably won't be able to do a full commentary on it. But I'll say a few words about it as we go, because some of it is poetic and some of it is doctrinal. It refers to certain doctrines. And I just want to make some of those clear, just in case you miss them. So, first of all, great faith. I've called it great faith rather than just faith. So in going back to the Vimalakirti Nidesha, the great love, that's Maha Maitri. Maitri as in metta. Great is Maha, and that means big, great, extensive. But it also means wise. It means without the belief in selfhood. So it's that kind of penetrating wisdom too. So similarly, this talk is the great faith. Great wisdom. So the great faith is the same as the great wisdom. We often think of those two things as different, don't we? Faith is there and there is wisdom, and they're not the same. You can have faith but not wisdom. But the great faith is the same as wisdom. Yeah. So wisdom and faith are very, very strongly connected, like two sides of a coin. I'm sure I've spoken about this man to you before, but the great theologian and one of the early comparative religionists, Wilfrid Cantle Smith, the Canadian, in his book Faith and Belief, The Difference Between Them, one of the things he says about faith is it has two aspects, insight and response. So the first part of faith is insight. It's a kind of knowing. It's a kind of seeing. You know, when you've been, don't know if you remember coming along to your first Buddhism classes. Do you remember those days? How long ago were they? But if you've ever been, maybe you've been at a recently a Buddhism course that you were maybe supporting or teaching on it, and there's a bunch of people there and you're telling them about the Dharma, and you can see them getting it, can't you? You can see that, like, the penny is dropping, as we say in England, aha moments all over the place. Like, oh yeah, oh of course, yeah, yeah. Insights happening all over the place, yeah. That's the first part of faith. The second part is response, and the response is yes. So you have the insight and then you go, yes. Now, not everybody does the second bit. Lots of people do the first bit. This whole class are having insights all over the place, and half of them don't come next week. And you never see them again. Yeah? So you can see them going, oh, yes, yes, yes. And then you don't see them again. Where are they after that? We've no idea. We don't know what happens to them. But you can very often understand something, but then the second part of faith, the saying yes to it, is the decision to live, try to live in the light of that insight, which is presumably what you've all done. So faith is insight and response. The faith that is like gold, pure and brilliant in the sunlight. I was in this retreat center in Spain when I wrote this, and it was hot. September and October were really hot. Sometimes in the afternoon, unbearably hot. You couldn't go for a walk sometimes. It's just so hot, you'd have to stay in your hut and wait for the afternoon to finish. But the sun shone a lot, actually. And there's this stupa. You know what a stupa is? Yeah. And it's got this point, and right at the top is a golden flame. Yeah. And when the sun shone on that golden flame at the top, God, absolutely brilliant. Fantastic. So quite a lot of the imagery here is from a hot Spain. Yeah, doesn't always work in a cool Stockholm. The faith that is like the sun shining in the cave of the heart. So the cave of the heart is the Guhya. You get this in the early Buddhist text. The cave of the heart is the inner self, you know, the inner you. So the faith that is like the sun shining, radiating, making bright the cave of the heart. The faith that is like the sky unbounded and limitless. So again, referring back to Cantwell Smith, his book, Faith and Belief, the Difference Between Them, he draws a very important distinction between faith and belief. Belief is like assenting, agreeing to certain propositions, the Four Noble Truths. Enlightenment is possible for all beings. You know, things like that in our tradition. You can believe those things or not. Presumably we're Buddhists, so we believe them. But that's a bit different from faith. Faith is, it's an intuitive response to something that maybe you can't even put words to. It's that feeling. Like the Buddha, before Buddhism existed, he just felt something else. You know, there's something other than what I can see here and everyone around me sees. There's something else. That's faith, that sense of... William James, often said to be the first psychologist, was very interested in religion, and he wrote this book, The Varieties of Religious Experience, interviewing people about their religious experiences. And towards the end, he starts trying to say what religion is. And he says, religion is like wanting a more. It's that sense that there's more to life than we can see around us. And faith is that sense that there's something more that I can be experiencing. I don't know what it is, but there's something. The faith that is like fire, burning the impurities of the self. So faith, as I say, isn't just belief. It's this sense that there's something more. And to get to that more, you need to let go of yourself. You need to, I was saying on this retreat, we were just doing that in Buddhism, purity has two aspects to it. There's ethical purity, but there's also transcendental purity. And purity in this sense is when you see something purely, yourself gets out of the way. Yeah, that's why art is so important, isn't it? You know, you look at a painting, you can only really get into it when you get out of the way of it. You can just see what it is. There it is. Or music. Music does this beautifully, doesn't it? Sometimes you just forget yourself. God, what a relief that is, isn't it? Yourself and your life and your troubles and your irritations and your worries. Well, that's gone. And there's just the experience of life. The faith that is the heart placed upon the three jewels. This is the doctrinal point I'm making here. Shraddha. The Sanskrit word for faith is Shraddha, from the root D, which means to place the heart upon. Same as the Latin credo, D, to place the heart upon. Sanskrit and Latin, close. Isn't that interesting? To place the heart upon. This is the point that Wilfred Campbell makes, that when you listen to, for instance, Bach's credo from the Mass in B minor, the B minor Mass. Do you know that piece?
Yeah.
The B minor Mass. It's not Bach saying he believes this, this, this and this. It's his outpouring of love for Christ and God. So similarly, Shraddha isn't, oh yes, I believe this. It's that sense of the heart placing it upon something, the three jewels. The faith that imagines the world anew, seeing with innocent eyes, bright, lucid and pure. I've talked about Shraddha, and there's another word in Sanskrit for faith, which is prasada. Or if you like the Pali, prasada. Lovely word, prasada. Usually it's translated as serene faith. But if you look it up in the dictionary, you'll see that it means brightness, clarity, lucidity. So I was thinking that when you have faith, it's as if you imagine, yeah, you imagine the world anew, afresh. We often think, I think, that when we think of wisdom, we see the world as it is. So it's exactly the same world when you're wise as it is beforehand, but now you see it clearly. So clarity. But I think that when you the wiser you become, the more imaginatively you see the world. Yeah, it's as if the scales, as it were, come from your eyes and you see not just clarity, but beauty and colour. The world becomes more colourful, if you like. It doesn't become more imaginative because it is imaginative, but your mind imagines the world afresh and new. The faith that is joy, rapture, calm, bliss, absorption, knowing and seeing things as they really are, serene withdrawal, dispassion, freedom and awakening. There's a list there. It's the list of the 12 positive links or nidanas to enlightenment that begins with dukkha. Dukkha, suffering, unsatisfactoriness, leading to faith, which leads to joy, which leads to all the others. I can't find them. Here they are. Joy, rapture, calm, bliss, and so on, all the way up to enlightenment. Begins with the realization that the life as you're living it is quite unsatisfactory, actually. It doesn't really work. And that's why people come to Buddhist centers. Their life isn't really working all that well. And they feel that it could work a lot better. So, brings you along to maybe a Buddhist center or to pick up a book on Buddhism or to look for something. And then you find it. There's something. Yes, maybe this is it. Faith, a little bit of faith. You practice. Out of that practice, you start feeling it is working, Joy, a bit of uplift, fantastic. From joy to rapture or ecstasy sometimes, which leads to calm and so on, right up to enlightenment. The faith that is natural, because it allows each stage of the path to rise naturally from the previous one with no willed effort. Now, there's another list which is very, very similar to the one I've just read you. It's just a couple of the sections are slightly different, but more or less the same list that the Buddha gave. And he gave this, 12-fold list from joy, rapture, all the way to enlightenment. And then he went back over it again and he said, you know, when you go from faith to joy, when you're in the stage of faith, you don't have to try to get to the stage of joy. It arises naturally from faith. Yeah, and he used the word dhammata for natural, dhammata. It just happens naturally. You don't have to do anything. You just intensify your faith and joy arises. Same from joy to rapture. You don't have to try and get it any better. You just stay with it and it happens naturally. So things just happen naturally, one after the other. Like flowers just opening, one after another. So the naturalness of the spiritual life. I think sometimes on our off days, we feel it's a bit unnatural. Why won't we just do what everyone else is doing? That seems more natural, doesn't it? Hang out, go to restaurants, go to the pub, drink, have parties. That seems natural. Aren't we doing something a bit unnatural? But I think the spiritual life is natural. And it's natural because things do flow from one to the other when you're practicing. Not always, of course. Sometimes it doesn't quite work like that. But I'm thinking in the long term. It doesn't always happen in the moment. But in the long term, it happens like that. How are we doing for time? 20 past 8 just gone. I've only got down to this bit here and there's all this here. So I'm wondering, should I skip a little bit? Skip a little bit and move on, shall I? So I'll start. I won't go through every one of these. I'll just make some choices now. This next one follows from what I've just said, though. The faith that is like a cup being filled to the brim and then brimming over. It's that sense of brimming overness of life. The sense of when you're really enjoying the spiritual life, when you're really getting on with it, it's as if your life just spills over. And it spills over in a really beautiful, generous way to everyone around you. So that generosity isn't an effort. It's not something, oh, better but help that person out. You just help that person out from the sheer joy of living. So that comes from faith, I think. Oh, and then I've got to read the next one, yeah, because the faith is like springtime. We're nearly there, aren't we? Well, we were there last month, weren't we? April was springtime, and now we're back into winter. But the faith that is like springtime, unstoppable, bursting forth everywhere. The faith that is like a child playing, full of joy. It's one of the things I like about faith. It's kind of childlike and playful. The spiritual life, in a way, is childlike and playful. There's another one a bit later on, isn't there? The faith that is like a young child, innocent and unself-conscious of its own beauty. Children, they can be so beautiful, can't they? They haven't got the slightest idea. They're playing away. And they're so gorgeous, aren't they? It's beautiful. They don't know. They don't know. Completely unself-conscious, but they're so beautiful. And faith is like that. Yeah? You don't think, oh, I've got faith. It's really lovely, isn't it? You just practice, and it just exudes from you this beauty, childlike, innocent kind of beauty. Going back, the faith that never engages in unskillful acts because they tarnish its brilliance. Tarnish isn't a very common word. Do you know what tarnish is? How can we say tarnish? Okay, so silver gets tarnished and it becomes dull. Yeah, so you can't see the shine anymore. So then you have to shine it up again. So tarnish. So with faith, in the later scholastic literature, 200-300 years after the Buddha, the scholars got down to his teachings and they kind of systematized it all. And it's called the Abhidharma, the higher teachings. And they've got this list of mental states. And they've got a list of, I think it's 11, isn't it? 11 skillful mental states. And loads of unskillful ones. Can't remember how many, loads. But only 11 skillful mental states. And faith is present in every one of those. Whenever you're in a skillful state, faith is present. So that's what I was thinking of here. The faith that never engages in unskillful acts because they tarnish its brilliance. Have you noticed that in yourself when you're unskillful? It kind of tarnishes you, doesn't it? You feel duller afterwards. It's not as good. Life isn't as good. You can be walking around like that for days, can't you? Sometimes weeks. You've done something unskillful and you don't feel great about it. And it kind of dampens your exuberance, your energy. Yeah. And then the opposite. The faith that only performs skillful acts because they allow it to shine out, brightening and warming the whole world. So faith. One of the things that Wilfred Campbell Smith said about faith is that belief divides people. So you've got Christians over there and Muslims there and Hindus over there and Buddhists over there and whatever. They all believe different things, so it kind of divides them. I used to live in a part of Manchester, very Jewish. You get these Hasidic Jews, the Hasids, with the men with their blacks, always wearing black suits. And they have the black Homburg hats on and the curls coming down here. And you see a white thing coming out there. And the women always in black and they wear wigs. And they always look the same. You know, that's a Jew, that's a Jew. You can tell immediately, you see them, that's a Jew. They walk in the road as well, Jews. They don't really have much sense of cars. They just sort of walk in the road. But anyway, right next to it was the Middle Eastern part of town. Mainly Muslims, yeah, and they've got a uniform as well. They have these can't remember the name of them. These kind of suits with these, you know, baggy trousers, huh? Oh, I can't remember. and they have, you know, they're like caftans, and then they have the little square hats on. And you, that's a Muslim and that's a Jew. So they're separate. They live in separate places. And it would be a pity, I think, if Buddhists took on a uniform, took on a certain dress. Oh, that's a Buddhist, that's a Buddhist. Because we don't really want to do that. So belief tends to divide people. I mean, look at the world, the history of the world. Faith is different. Faith unites people. Yeah? Faith is that sense of there is something other than we can experience here. There is something transcendent that transcends us all. So faith unites us. Where can we go now? Oh, let's do this one. The faith that is like a good-natured comedian who makes us laugh at our own absurdities. Yeah. The best comedians make you laugh at yourself, don't they? Yeah. There's this lovely woman in Britain called Miranda Hart. Don't know if you get her. You probably don't get her because it's very English humour. You probably think, what's all this about? But she's a funny-looking person, and she gets everything wrong. You know, she sort of goes to a business meeting and something's trailing along behind her. You know, she doesn't know about it. And those kind of silly humour. But the great thing about it, afterwards I always feel liberated, because we all try to make, a positive impression. That's the word I'm after. We're trying to make an impression, aren't we, all the time? Oh, is it? And she gets it wrong every time. And it's so lovely to watch that, because you think, oh yeah, everyone's trying to do that, aren't they? And when it does go wrong, it's so embarrassing, isn't it? Terribly embarrassing. I remember being, years ago, I was in Siena, I was having a holiday in Siena. And there's, you know, the brilliant hexagonal square in the middle of Siena. Loads of tourists. And you get these buskers. And you get this mime artist, comedian mime artist. And all he does, person walks across the square and he walks behind them, mimicking them. So someone's walking like this. And he exaggerates it, you know. Like this. Someone's walking a bit like this. And he's walking behind them going, that's... And it's so funny. So funny. And sometimes he walks right beside them. You know, they're sort of going like this, and he's going like this. And they see him. And then the response is really, really amazing. Some people just laughed, embarrassed. You know, and I got really angry. You know, really angry with him. It was really remarkable to see. Yeah. But yeah, it's wonderful when you can laugh at yourself, isn't it? When you laugh at your own absurdities. Because we are a bit absurd, aren't we, human beings? How are you doing? How much more of this can you take?
A lot.
A bit more. All right, okay. The faith that is luminous, only defiled by adventitious defilements. That's a scriptural allusion here to a very, very early Buddhist text where the Buddha was talking to his monks, his bhikkhus, and he said, the mind, O monks, is luminous. And it's only defiled by adventitious defilements. We need a bit of translation here, don't we? So luminous is bright, luminosity, really bright. So the mind is really bright, actually. But we don't always experience it as bright, right? Sometimes it's a bit dull. And it's only defiled, covered over by adventitious. Adventitious is like accidental. Doesn't have to be there. It's not part of the picture, but it just comes every now and then. So it's only, your mind is actually luminous, bright, but it's only dampened down by things that happen. The faith that has no second arrow because it doesn't resist suffering. This is another one of the Buddhist texts where the Buddha says that a wise man might get hit by an arrow, dying, which hurts, obviously, but they don't get hit by the second arrow. So what's the second arrow? The second arrow is, oh, I've been hit by an arrow. Oh, this is terrible. What's going to happen? Yeah, it's the reaction. So you might get hurt by something, but a wise person only gets hurt by that one thing. Unwise people get hurt by that one thing, and then they hurt themselves extra by worrying, catastrophizing, saying this isn't fair, all that kind of thing, so that you get a whole extra mass of suffering that doesn't have to be there. So the faith that has no second arrow, because it doesn't resist suffering. So when you have a lot of faith, you don't resist any suffering that comes to you. It's just like, okay, it's suffering, I'm suffering, it's okay, so I continue. The faith that is Pingyas, who was always with the Buddha. How many of you know who Pingya was? Oh, I'm going to have to tell them now, aren't I? You two know. Okay, so Pingya, old man, very old man. One of 16 Brahmins who went a long, long way to see the Buddha. Their teacher, Bhavari, wanted to go and see the Buddha, but he was too old. So he said, you 16, go and find the Buddha. And they went a long way to see him. They eventually found him on a hill. And they were delighted to see him, and they just asked him loads and loads of questions. And he answered all their questions. Brilliant text. Final questioner was Pingya. And he said, I'm really old and frail, and I need to know this. And he asked the Buddha the question, and the Buddha answered the question. I'm afraid I can't remember the question or the answer now, but that doesn't really matter for the sake of this talk. What matters is, after that, the Brahmins went back to Bhavari, their teacher, to report back on their findings. And Pingya was so taken with the Buddha, so taken with him. He started talking about the Buddha in, you know, beautiful language, about how brilliant the Buddha was, you know, fantastic to meet him, this tremendous man. And after a while, Bhavari said, well, if he's so great, why don't you be with him all the time, you know? And Pingya said, well, I am, actually. I'm with him all the time. I'm with him in my mind. I can see him. At night, he's with me. And then suddenly the Buddha speaks. Now, the Buddha isn't actually there. Yeah. They've left the Buddha way back. But suddenly the Buddha speaks and says, you can do it, Pingya. Just like three others he mentions, Vakali, a couple of others. They were released through faith. Released through faith means enlightened through faith. You could do it too. You can do it too. Brilliant. Pingya. The faith is like a wise elder who, when the young feel discouraged, tells them that their efforts will bear fruit, all in good time. I had to put that in because for the last few years, all in good time is my favourite phrase. Do you got a similar thing? You must have a similar thing in stock in Sweden. All in good time. It's what old people to say to young people. Young people have to dash, don't they? Quick, quick, oh, we're never going to get it finished. You will get it finished. All in good time. When are we going to get there? We will get there all in good time. Yeah? All in good time. In its own time, when it's ready to happen. So there's this sense that young people have of frustration and impatience and come on, let's go, let's go. And old people are a bit slower, aren't they? Come on, Dad, aren't you ready? No, I'm not ready yet. Hold on a minute. Come on, let's go. Like a dog, you know. You just have to say the word. You just have to say walk, don't you? You're in your home, you say walk and the dog hears it. It's coming. Come on, come on, come on. And we need to go, we need to go. But the faith, that is like a wise elder. Elder is an older person, a wise elder, who, when the young feel discouraged, tells them that their efforts will bear fruit all in good time. If you practice the Dharma, it will definitely work. But it will work when it happens. Yeah? The faith that refreshes the mind as cold water refreshes the body on a hot day. It was very, very hot when I wrote that. And it was fantastic to pour a bucket of cold water over you. It's just fantastic. Doesn't really work that image right now, does it, for us in Stockholm? The faith that is reasonable but doesn't engage in conceptual proliferation. Yeah. So the Buddha was a reasonable man. He liked to talk to people and he reasoned with them. There were times when someone disagreed with the Buddha, and sometimes you almost get the impression he liked that they disagreed with him, and then he would say something like, "If you would talk with me on the basis of truth, we might have some conversation about that." It's one of my favourite phrases of the Buddha. "If you would talk on the basis of truth, we might have some conversation about that." So reasoning something through. The faith that is reasonable but doesn't engage in conceptual proliferation, you know, this that can go on in the discussion, concepts and intellectualization. It's not interested in intellectualization, but it's happy to be reasonable. The faith that doesn't argue with scientists because it keeps to its own domain. So there are scientists, aren't there, certainly in the UK and America, who are trying to say that religion is just rubbish. There's no evidence for any of it working and so on. And what I say to those scientists is, I'm sure you're really good at what you do, but you haven't got the slightest idea what we're doing. Yeah, you live in a different world. It's a different domain. It's a different area. And they don't, you know... You can measure certain things. Science is about measuring, isn't it? And so on. And you can't measure somebody's wisdom. How can you possibly do that? It's a different thing. So we stick to our own domain. The faith that is too happy to argue anyway. It's just like, oh, okay then. I don't mind. It's all right. You ever been in that situation where you know somebody's wrong? You think, they're not going to listen to me anyway. So do you want a cup of tea? Just do something else instead. So the faith that is too happy to argue. Somebody a couple of years ago said something really nice to me. He said, what would you rather be, happy or right? Do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? Very often I want to be right. And it doesn't make me very happy when I'm trying to be right. Do you want to be happy or right? Where else can we go with this? The faith is like a traveller going to a country he has never previously been to and not knowing what he will find. So faith is like that, isn't it? It's like, well, you don't know what's going to happen. We kind of think we know what's going to happen. We predict, but our predictions are usually wrong, aren't they? So many people I know, and I was the same actually, but I've heard a couple of people say it recently, that when they first came across Buddhism and decided to commit themselves to it, they thought they'd get enlightened in, what, 5 years, 10 years? And now it's 20 years later, and they are still not enlightened, and it's completely different than they expected it to be. So when you have faith in something, you don't know where it's going to lead you. You don't know what kind of spiritual life you're going to have. You don't know how it's going to unfold. And sometimes it can be quite surprising, the things that people do. You've got Gyuhye Vajra coming, haven't you? So I know Gyuhye Vajra a bit, and I read it in Shabda, I think, in the Order magazine. Wow. And then I was telling a friend, someone who knows him, we were on the phone, and I said, oh yeah, you know Gyuhye Vajra's moving to Stockholm. He said, Gyuhye Vajra? I said, yeah. And he said, Gyuhye Vajra? And I said, yeah. And he said, the Gyuhye Vajra who lives just... I said, yeah, the Gyuhye Vajra who lives at that place there is moving to Stockholm. Really? It's the kind of thing that happens, isn't it? The faith that longs for its consummation in wisdom, as a man who has been many years away longs for home. I must have been away from home for about 2 months by then, And there were times when I longed to be home. That longing feeling, do you know it? Where you long for something. It might be you long to be at home when you've been away for a while, or you might long to be with someone. What do you long for, I wonder? We all long for something, don't we? Longing, longing. And it's good to develop this sense of longing for wisdom, longing for awakening. The faith that longs for its consummation in wisdom, because it's got some wisdom, faith has some wisdom, but it wants to open completely. It's like a half-open lotus flower. It wants to completely open, longing for that sense of, you know, like when you want to really stretch, like this. You do the, oh, that's nice, isn't it? Oh, someone else around, I think. Sense of longing, opening completely to wisdom. The faith that bows to everything, because everything bears the mark of reality. So at first we have faith in certain things, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, certain teachers, this book, I've got faith in this book, this teaching, faith in this teaching. But eventually, the more you practice, you realise that actually everything is real. Everything is shunyata. Everything is dharma. Everything. Even plastic. Everything is real. And so why bow just to the Buddha? Why not bow to everything and everybody? Even people who are really seem really stupid to you, really ignorant and unenlightened. There's something in them which is real. They're real people. So, you know, some people like to bow to everyone. These Mahayana texts, where there's one bodhisattva, his practice is to bow to absolutely everyone. Everyone he meets, he bows down to them because they're real. Yeah. They're the truth. The faith that is not the self, but arisen spontaneously, free of self-willing. So faith is one of those mental states that is not willed. You can't make it happen. You just feel it. And it goes beyond the self. It doesn't come from selfishness. It comes from somewhere else. I think that faith is this sense that there is no self. Faith is the felt sense that there is no self, actually. Therefore, the faith that is not one's own, because it connects us with everyone else. Yeah, faith connects us, belief divides us. So the faith that is not, it's not your faith, it's not my faith, it's our faith. Wilford Campbell Smith says that faith is the most human of emotions, so it connects us together. I actually feel I have a lot in common with Christians and Muslims and so on. Because, you know, I don't agree at all with the things that they say about a lot of things. But they do sense something else, something other. The faith that has nothing, needs nothing, knows nothing, and is nothing. Because there is no thing to have, to grasp for, to know, or to be. Can't think of anything to say about that. How are we doing for time? Because we're nearly finished. Is this nearly a good time to finish the talk? Yeah? Okay. The faith that, at the right time, bursts open the heart, leaving only unbounded happiness, free of the misery of selfhood. I was just talking about faith being this sense that there is no self. And the idea of the self is one of the main causes of our suffering. That's why we worry. We worry about ourselves and what's going to happen to me. We protect ourselves from other people because we're afraid of what they might do to me. We get angry with people because they get in our way. They stop us from doing what we want, so we get angry with them. It's all to do with this belief in the self. And it's such a pity because it's unnecessary. It's unnecessary because there isn't a self. So we're protecting something that isn't there. We're worrying about something that there's no need to worry about because it doesn't actually exist. There is no abiding self anywhere. It's strange because it feels like there is, doesn't it? It really feels like there is. But there's another part of you that kind of knows that there isn't. Yeah? You kind of feel... You kind of know that it's delusory and it's causing you unnecessary suffering, and you would like to get to the point where you can let it go completely. But it's hard, isn't it? It's hard. The faith that at the right time, when you're ready, yeah, when you're ready, it will happen, bursts open the heart. That soft inner selfhood, that warm beating heart, which you think is you, yeah. Vulnerable, easily hurt, yeah, you protect it. The faith that at the right time, not now, at the right time, bursts open that heart, leaving only unbounded happiness. Can you imagine that? No more self-clinging. No more looking after me. No more worrying in the middle of the night, 4 o'clock in the morning. No more of that. If you do wake up, it's just more of whatever that is. Yeah, I don't mind being awake. Leaving only unbounded happiness, limitless happiness. It's only the self that limits our happiness. Yeah? As long as we've got a self, our happiness is limited and contingent, conditioned upon things happening in the right way. But when you've left the self behind, there's just openness, freedom, complete and utter happiness. Free of the misery of selfhood. That Avalokiteshvara is the great